Hey guys, Ezekiel McAdams here. Happy 2019. I don't know about you guys, but the last year just seemed to fly by in a blur. I swear I sneezed and it was December and I'm like, where did this year go? If you remember, last year around March, I started a special series, which at the time was supposed to be every time I finished a season of the Star Trek series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, or Voyager. I sort of fell behind on that. I kept watching up until August, and that's when I kind of took a pause on season five of each subsequent series, TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. So that was one of my goals for last year. I failed miserably. As you can tell, that there was actually only one episode of my special series last year, and then you never heard a word of it. So, as of yesterday, I have finished season 5 on Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. And I wanted to talk to you guys about it because I've started this, and by gosh darn it, I'm going to finish it. So, If you remember, I have only ever watched The Next Generation all the way through, of all the Star Trek shows. Deep Space Nine was always my favorite, but I stopped watching Deep Space Nine, I believe, around, like, early season 6. My memory is the episode where they're all kind of in the 1920s working at a newspaper that Sisko is dreaming about. That is the last episode of Deep Space Nine that I believe I watched when it was airing. I fell asleep during that episode, and for whatever reason, that was the thing that was like, okay, this show is boring, it's super nerdy, I don't enjoy it, and I went like cold turkey. I didn't even see Star Trek Insurrection or Nemesis, the two movies that had the Next Generation cast, for years later. And I had to kind of almost be tied down by one of my best friends who said Nemesis was like the best in the series. And I'm like, I don't watch Star Trek anymore. And this was like 8 years ago. And he's like, no, just watch this for me. And so I begrudgingly did. And it wasn't bad. So I stopped watching Star Trek, despite DS9 being my favorite series of all of Star Trek thus far. Discovery Season 2 hasn't started yet, so I can't really say anything, but it was always my favorite. I never watched it all the way through. I went back years later and I watched the series finale of that and Voyager, just to kind of know how it ends, because I had read it on Wikipedia and the Star Trek Wiki Memory Alpha, but I sort of just wanted to see the whole thing for myself. So, long story short, like I said, Next Generation is the only series I've watched all the way through. But I've never gone back and rewatched it. There were a few episodes that I would either see on TV or I did go back and watch that were of interest to me. So now that is said and done, how did I think season 5 measured up? I really liked season 5. It's funny that, like, as a child and now as an adult, Ensign Ro and Guinan seem to appear in this season more than they actually did. I think Ro had like 5 episodes, Guinan had 4 as well. But I really liked the character of Ensign Ro. I thought it was so interesting when I learned years ago that initially she was supposed to be in the role that Kira Nerys on Deep Space Nine was in. And I'm really glad that Michelle Forbes declined. She just didn't want to be a regular on TV at the time, because I really love Major Kira Nerys, and I really love Nana Visitor's portrayal. I've said this before, Major Kira is probably like my favorite character, if I had to name one. Definitely one of my favorite characters in all Star Trek. So, I don't know what I would do. Ensign Ro would have been interesting, but I'm really glad they chose Major Kira. That being said, it's really nice to have Ensign Ro on the show, because that is just one of my memories. So there's so many episodes where she appeared, and the first one where Picard has to go get her, and then at the very end she kind of decides to stay aboard the Enterprise. It was a really touching episode. Another favorite one was Disaster, where Troy is on the bridge while a bunch of the other staff are in 10 forward and Keiko is giving birth to Molly. And I thought it was a really interesting episode because I've said since my rewatch that Troy really doesn't get a lot to do. It bothers me now as an adult while I'm rewatching because I just think she's such an interesting character, and I love just how she interacts with the rest of the crew. And so for her to be able to like command the Enterprise just even once was very cool. The Game, which is probably my favorite Wesley Crusher episode of all time. It's one of those ones that stuck with me as a kid. It stuck with me as an adult. When I think of my favorite or most interesting Star Trek episodes, that's always one that kind of pops up, because it was this one where like Wesley had to save the day, but I didn't feel like he was being annoying like he was in season one or even season two, where he just was like a Mary Sue, where he was amazing in every way and solved all these problems. And it's like, well, why do you need a chief engineer or Data or a commanding officer when you've got Wesley Crusher on board, right? Like, it just... But this one was interesting because he comes aboard to see his mom. He's already in Starfleet Academy. He is wanting to hook up with this ensign. And this game that Riker brought back from Ryza is contaminating the crew and basically brainwashing them. And it's a good episode because Wesley has to save the day in not a way where like any of the other crew could have done the job. So I liked it. I always like the Trek episodes that have a seedy underbelly. There's especially one coming up later on the season that is like one of my all-time favorite episodes, and we'll get to that in a second. Unification wasn't one of my favorites, but it was notable for me because that was the episode that Spock appeared, and the one where his father had passed away. For me as a child, I didn't really watch any of the original series. I watched one or two of the movies, but my knowledge of Kirk and Spock and McCoy and Scotty and the rest of the Enterprise was very limited. So I think this is one of the few times, because like Dr. McCoy's cameo at Encounter to Farpoint, I don't think resonated with me at an early age, but Spock appeared. I knew the gravitas of this character. I knew who Spock was, but I didn't really know anything about him. So that episode has just always stuck with me. Plus, Commander Sela makes her returns in that one. And I still don't really know how I feel. Like, I always love Denise Crosby coming back, but it bothers me that the way they got her to come back was her basically being raped by one of the Romulans from her past self that was from another timeline. Like, that bothers me more so than the idea, just because it's like it always seems that whether it's Counselor Troy or in this case Tashi Yar, that they're like, oh, we don't really know what to do with the women characters, we're just gonna have them raped and it'll be a traumatic episode. And it bothers me, and it bothers me that I wish more women writers and producers were on Star Trek during that time. And that's really all I have to say about that. It was cool seeing Spock though. Matt Frewer, who is one of my favorite actors, Honey I Shrunk the Kids is probably one of my favorite movies, definitely one of my favorite 80s movies. And he's such a joy in everything he appears. I get really excited when I see Matt Frewer. And so I just remember that episode because to me, it was Big Russ Thompson from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids playing this kind of nefarious time traveler that's posing as someone from a further time period than he actually was. It was a fun episode. It was one of my favorites of the season. Now comes to probably my least favorite episode of the season, and that was Violations, which basically is a rape episode. There's a species of alien that have advanced telepathy, and one of the guys basically rapes several members of the crew mentally, and it's just, it was a disgusting episode. I felt how it was produced was very shoddily done. I think that the idea is interesting, but the way they did it was severely lacking. So I really don't want to talk more about Violations. I'm going to go next on to Conundrum, which is an interesting one because it's another, like, kind of imposter episode. There was a few of them this season where either an entity takes control over somebody or they're brainwashed. So in this one, there's, like, this flash of light that hits the bridge crew, and all of a sudden it just kind of stops. Data stops functioning, and when everyone wakes up, they have amnesia, and there's a second commander, Kieran McDuff. And I really liked how this one was structured narratively, because he just kind of shows up. The audience knows that something is amiss, but nobody on the bridge crew or the rest of the Enterprise can figure out, because to them it's just commonplace. He's integrated himself in the database, so it appears that he's always been there. I wish we knew more about this character. I thought it was interesting. I liked the actor who played the alien and Kieran McDuff, and it was just an enjoyable episode. Next comes to another, like, alien entity one. There's a few of these ones, like I said. Power Play, which they're responding to a crashed ship on a moon in a system, and it turns out that there are a bunch of prisoners that, like, hundreds of years ago were stranded on this moon without their bodies, kind of stuck in a storm that's cyclical and never ending. And during an away mission, they take the bodies of Troy and Data and O'Brien. And I like those episodes. This one I always remembered because it was the first episode that, like, Troy was kind of malevolent and scary. And I kind of know that side that Marina Sirtis can play from her role as Damona in Disney's Gargoyles. And it just was because fun. You can just see how Marina Sirtis, like, affects her voice, like, her affectations, because when she's doing Damona, it's completely different than how she plays Troy. And the alien that was controlling Troy was Damona. So I'm in the middle of finishing Gargoyle season 2, and that was just really cool, because it added a layer onto an episode that I already like. The Outcast was a really interesting episode because, according to the Memory Alpha Wiki, this one in particular was supposed to be an analogy for homosexuality at the time, where there wasn't a lot of gay characters or couples. It wasn't prevalent in TV at all, and so this was supposed to be an analogy, this genderless race that you know, decades and years ago they had decided to evolve and be non-gendered. And especially in 2018 or 2019, This is a very kind of topical and current episode, because we now have many people who are transgender and are dealing with this exact issue that was going on in the episode, and basically saying to people, am I not this person because of my gender? And it's a very interesting discussion. And I really liked it. And as a quick aside that's non-Star Trek, I've also been trying to watch The Orville so I can talk about it in a future pod episode for Pop Fishbowl with my co-host Kelly. And they also had an episode that was about an alien that was born a different gender, and just kind of the ramifications. And I thought that how the Orville handled it was much better than The Outcast. In both episodes, spoiler alert, end on a really down note, and I really appreciate that, because I love when things are more gray than just black and white, and sometimes things don't end well, and they're not supposed to, and I like that. So despite it being a very sad episode, I really enjoyed The Outcast. Perfect Mate is notable only because Fonka Jensen plays basically a woman who was engineered to kind of mate with someone to kind of bring the species together, basically like an interspecies arranged marriage. And what I found interesting about this is that Famke Janssen and Patrick Stewart go on to play Professor X and Jean Grey in the X-Men series, and so they had a very interesting relationship where she was attracted to Picard, and it was just really cool seeing like Professor X and Jean Grey together, just as an aside. Like, I've always known Patrick Stewart first and foremost as Picard, but that just was really exciting, because if I had known that Famke Janssen was in an episode of Star Trek, I must have forgotten about it. You know how I was saying at the game that I liked this, the underbelly? Well, probably one that has that as well, and one of, I think, my favorite episode of season 5, one that has stuck with me since I was a child, is Imaginary Friend, where this young girl that is on the Enterprise with her dad, Ensign Sutter, Clara Sutter, has this imaginary friend named Isabella, and she's seeing Counselor Troy because her dad thinks that, you know, it's not right that she's not really interacting with the other children and has this imaginary friend. And Troy is saying, well, you know, it's probably because Clara moves around so much. And then all of a sudden, going through this red nebula, this entity appears on the ship and manifests itself as Clara Sutter's imaginary friend, Isabella. And I think one of the reasons why this episode struck me and stuck with me for over 20 years is because I was the same age as the character Clara Sutter in this episode. And so as a child, I could relate. I've heard, you know, through the fandom and community that a lot of people don't like this episode. A lot of the writers on Star Trek Next Generation didn't like this episode because it didn't feature really any of the main adult characters. But I really like this one as a child. I've always loved things with like a darker sensibility and current and undercurrent. And like I said, I loved the fact that, spoiler alert, this entity, when Isabella, or the Clara Sutter, wants to kind of refrain from playing with her, she kind of takes on this darker turn. And there's like, I will never forget the point where like Counselor Troy goes looking for Isabella, quote unquote, and it's kind of very ominous, and she's like, oh, is she in here? Is she in here? And then all of a sudden, like, she appears behind Troy and like blasts her with an energy that always kind of scared me as a child. And I just really like that one. It's one of the few ones that I wish either somebody would do a fanfic or write something where Clara Sutter returns to that nebula as an adult and continues her friendship and relationship with the entity known as Isabella. I think that would be a really interesting story. I would love to see a sequel to that. Iborg was a really cool one because it's the first one where a Borg decides, before Seven of Nine became a central character on Voyager, to establish independence from the collective. I really liked the kind of morality and a lot of the issues that were presented in this episode, you know, for free will and identity and independence. And it was just a really interesting one. It also had Guinan in it, and I loved how Guinan is really resistant to the idea of a Borg being on the ship, and then finally she goes and she's the one that tells Picard to go. Like, it was a really good episode that dealt with a lot of kind of really good questions, and it was just good. It was a good Borg episode, it was a good Picard episode, it was a good Guinan episode. The next phase is the one where Geordi and Ro are on an away mission on a Romulan vessel that had like a warp core breach, and because of their cloaking thing, several members of the Romulan ship, as well as Geordi and Ro, are accidentally cloaked when they're transported, and everyone believes they were dead. As a child, I thought they were dead as well. I remember I'd watched the movie Ghost that also had Whoopi Goldberg in it, and I remember being really sad when I watched this episode as a child, because I really believed that Geordi and Ro were ghosts, and I was like, well, but, you know, and I probably asked my mom and my dad, like, well, how are they going to continue in the show? Are they ghosts? Are they going to be ghost characters? And my parents probably said, Ezekiel, just watch the episode. Don't ask so many questions. That's one of my problems. I always ask too many questions. So I just like the episode because of that reason. It's not a spectacular episode by any means, but there it is. And finally, the season finale is, again, one of my favorites of season 5. I really enjoyed this season, like I said. Time's Arrow. I love time travel stories, especially in Star Trek, whether it's, you know, the Voyager going back to 1996, to Sisko and Bashir and Dax going back in time to the Sanctuary districts. So any episode where, like, the entire crew goes back in time, I love it. I love that, like, it starts with a mystery with Data's severed head and trying to figure out how Data's severed head and, you know, ended up in 18th century San Francisco and in an archaeological dig, and then they go back, and it's really interesting that this alien species is trying to save the race by also going and, like, you know, killing humans and try to kind of faking it as cholera, because they're like, well, there's a disease and epidemic going on anyways, we might as well take advantage of it to save our species. So it's a really fun one. I love Samuel Clements or Mark Twain and Guinan being on the earth during that century. It's one of my favorites, and so it's a great way to end the season. On a Deep Space Nine, like I said, I'm trying to think. I think that I did watch season 5 when it aired, but I don't think I saw every episode, because while going through the season, there was a lot that I didn't remember. So the season premiere, I didn't really find notable. It was interesting because Odo and Sisko are trying to find an infiltrator in the Klingon Empire that will possibly be a changeling. But it's not one that resonated with me. So I have to start with, first and foremost, the Star Trek anniversary. It would have been the 40th, I believe, at the time. Trial and Tribulations, where the crew goes back in time and they kind of splice old footage from the Star Trek episode from the original series, Trouble with Tribbles, with the Deep Space Nine crew. I remember at the time they made a big deal about this. They were talking about how they used the technology at the time that was in the Forrest Gump movie. There was this big anniversary celebration where a lot of the past and present Star Trek actors went on stage. I remember Ben Stiller being there. It was the first time I had heard of this Ben Stiller actor. And they made a big deal about, like, this is the episode to watch, more so than, like, when Sulu appeared on Voyager in, I believe, season 3 or 4, also during that time. So this was like a big deal that they made. I enjoyed it. It's probably the first time that I ever watched an episode from the original series. It was just, it's a fun episode. I loved Odo and the Tribbles. I loved Quark at the end when the promenade is filled with all the Tribbles. It was fun. Speaking of episodes that are about possession, in season 5, O'Brien was one of three crew members that was taken over by entities. And this one, it's interesting, also from season 5, but many years later on Deep Space Nine, his wife Keiko is controlled by an alien during a dig on Bajor. And this, I remember that it was really cool because it was one of the few Keiko episodes that we've ever gotten, both on TNG or DS9. And Rosalind Chow is just able to have a lot of menace, and I love how she switches back and forth from very pleasant when she's interacting with the other station members as part of her cover, and how she interacts with Miles and even trying to hurt Keiko's body. I really like the episode, just all in all. The Begotten was a really special one because Odo got his shape-shifting abilities that he lost due to the trial by the Founders at the end of season 4. It's a really good one because he's dealing with Dr. Mora and this changeling baby, and his feelings for Dr. Moira disappear, and at the very end he's able to transform because the changeling baby is dying and wants to give Odo one last gift. So it was a really touching episode. I loved Odo becoming a shapeshifter again. I as soon as he had lost his powers, I just kept waiting for him to get it back. So that was good. For the uniform, this is the one where Sisko is kind of Captain Ahab to Eddington as the white whale. So Sisko is embarrassed that Eddington got the best of him, that he was able to trick him and Starfleet and everyone else in Deep Space Nine, that he was secretly a Maquis. And so it was just really, really good to have Eddington back. I've always found him an interesting character. I thought this was a really good episode for both Sisko and Eddington. And I love how Eddington kind of questions Sisko's ethics and morality at times, and it was just really interesting to see how far Sisko would go when he felt betrayed. Purgatory's Shadow and By Inferno's Light were a two-parter where it's discovered that Bashir was a changeling for the last couple months, and himself and Martok and Anobrin Tain, who is not destroyed in the episode from last season, are all on an asteroid, prisoners of the Dominion. It was really cool episodes. I always love episodes with Garak and Anobrin Tain, and it was interesting that Bashir was a changeling. I don't remember if I ever watched the episode, so that actually surprised me, and it was nice. Next episode, and I assume it took place a couple months later, Dr. Bashir, I assume. Bashir is revealed to be genetically altered by his parents at a young age, that he was developmentally challenged, and his parents were just trying to do the best for their son. And this is revealed because Dr. Lewis Zimmerman, who is the basis for the EMH on Voyager, comes to the station because he wants Bashir to be the model for the LMH, the long-term medical hologram. And of course, he wants to meet with everyone possible, including Bashir's parents, that he is kind of not really involved with anymore. So it was, I think it gave another layer to Bashir. Unlike a lot of people in the fandom, I've always liked the character of Bashir, but also I started watching that show at a very young age. So, I mean, I also liked Kes on Voyager, and my co-host Kelly and I kind of agree to disagree on that one, where she just always found the character lacking, and I thought the character had a lot of potential. So it was a good one. It was really cool to see Robert Picardo, even though he wasn't playing the Doctor, on Deep Space Nine. That was just really fun. I wish that he would have appeared again. Ferengi Love Song's Quark's mother, Ishka, returns. I was really sad because last season she was portrayed by Andrea Martin, who is a really good comedian. She was on Second City, which is kind of like a big Canadian staple. And I thought she did a really good job. It was actually one of the touching Quark episodes. It's funny, Quark's one of my favorite characters, but I don't like a lot of his episodes that are his own, and I really loved that one. So it was sad. Not that Cecily Adams or Cecily Strong didn't do a good job, but there was just something Andrea Martin did. So I was sad to learn through Memory Alpha that she just really hated the prosthetics, and that deterred her from coming back. So that was sad. It was an interesting episode. Zek and her and Quark's mother are like seeing each other, and she's really the power behind the throne because of Zek's failing memory. It was a fun episode. Children of Time was notable because after like seasons of it being very obvious to the audience that Odo has feelings for Kira, it's finally revealed when the Defiant crashes on this planet, and it's revealed that their descendants lived 200 years on from everybody, and Odo is now hundreds of years old, and he just outright says to Kira, "I've always loved you." And it was a really interesting episode because it finally got that out in the open. It changed things, of course, for Odo and Kira's friendship and their relationship going forward. And it was really interesting because at the end of the episode, spoiler alert, the Odo from the future decides to wipe out the race to save Kira because he loves her. And it was really interesting how at the end of the episode, even O'Brien and Sisko decided to stay because they didn't want to sacrifice the lives of 8,000 people by restoring their timeline to get home to their loved ones and their lives. So the fact that Odo did it was really interesting. Finally, we come to the season finale, which is the big one, one of the big story arcs, if not the biggest in the whole history of Deep Space Nine, is when the Dominion War finally began. So this has been kind of alluded to, and it's been kind of just, you know, kind of in the air for the whole season, but this is when it finally happens, when Sisko makes a stand. He decides to put a minefield in front of the wormhole to stop the Dominion and Jem Hadar reinforcements, and they end up taking the station because they're just overrun, and Sisko decides to retreat. And he leaves the station with everybody except Kira and Odo, who are, you know, part of the Bajoran militia. But Bajor has just signed a non-aggression treaty with the Dominion because Sisko thinks that's the best way. So, of course, they're there. Gul Dukat can't do anything. And much to Sisko's surprise, Jake ends up staying to write about the events as a war correspondent. So that was just, it was really interesting. Jake is a character that I've always liked, and I really like this arc for his character because it finally allows him to kind of do something that's separate from his dad and everything. So I'm really excited. I don't remember if season six, like I said, was the last season of Deep Space Nine that I watched when it aired. I remember a few episodes from the Dominion War, so I believe that I still was watching it, so it'll be interesting to see how season 6 shapes up, and I'm excited to talk about it. Now we get to Voyager season 5. So one thing that I didn't get to mention because I had lost track of doing these series, and so I stopped watching Voyager probably in, I want to say, season 4, early season 4, after 7 and 9 came aboard. I really liked Cass. I didn't like that Cass was off the show. I didn't like the early portrayal of 7 of 9 and how she related and her chemistry with the rest of the actors and characters. So I stopped watching. I was just like, I'm done. And I'm really glad that my co-host and friend Kelly kind of advised me to kind of keep going and to give Seven a chance, because during season 4 I really came to like her character, her relationship with Janeway, her relationship with the Doctor, her growth. I thought she turned out to be a much better character than Cass. I still will say to I'm blue in the face until I'm dead that I think Cass had a lot of potential, and I wish more was done with her character, but I can't disagree or dispute a lot of Kelly's criticisms, because they're absolutely true. And I think that ultimately 7 of 9 is just a more developed and well-rounded character. So that was just my quick kind of preface. Night was the season premiere, and it was interesting because Voyager is in this expanse that is completely dark without any stars, and they're for 2 months, and they're kind of going stir crazy. And it was the first one where the Malon is introduced, and it's this garbage dumping aliens. There were kind of a weird race. Voyager went through a lot of weird races because I think they were trying to kind of find their villain. Like TNG had the Borg, DS9 had like the Dominion and the Jem'Hadar and the Founders and the Cardassians, and Voyager, they started with the Kazon didn't work out, then there was like the Borg, and then there was like species 8472, and then the Malon I think was supposed to be like the new one, and like I don't know, the Malon just never worked for me. They just felt kind of weird. So that's it. Extreme Risk was a good one because Tom Paris creates the Delta Flyer, which will be used in like subsequent episodes in the rest of the season. You can always tell when like the production team like designs something, whether it's the Astrometrics lab for Seven or the Delta Flyer for Tom, because they build this new set piece and they're like, we have to use it, we have to get the most out of our money. So all of a sudden, like season four, Voyager starts using the Astrometrics lab all the time, which they previously never did, or Tom Paris is using like the Delta Flyer every single episode. I personally find that really funny. So he creates the Delta Flyer. It was a really good episode for B'Elanna because she's going through like PTSD and depression because of the loss of the Maquis crew members that she'd heard about from the Alpha Quadrant. I thought it was a good episode for B'Elanna. In the Flesh was probably my favorite episode of season 5, just because I really like the idea of Species 8472 reconstructing this replica of Starfleet Academy as a training facility, kind of for like a preeminent invasion, because they believe that the Federation were allies with the Borg and that they had to get them before Federation got them. So it was just interesting. I liked that Ray Walston appeared as Boothby, even though it was kind of like a faux Boothby. It was still really cool to see that actor again. I liked the relationship that Chakotay had with one of the species. 8472, I thought that was really interesting. I don't think she reappears, but it'd be cool if she did. And it was a neat episode. Timeless was one of those many episodes that Voyager's done where the timeline in the future is bad, and one of the crew members goes back in time, and this one falls on an older Chakotay and an older Harry Kim to kind of like get the Doctor back up and running. And it's like Chakotay and Harry Kim and the Doctor trying to like prevent Voyager from crashing into this ice planet by using this experimental warp drive. I didn't really like this episode, other than that for the first time I really, really liked Harry Kim. Like, not that I dislike Harry Kim, but like of all the Voyager crew, he's just the most bland. Like, I mean, he's just there all the time. He's just like, oh, there's Harry. Like, he'll have a lot of stories and it's like, oh, it's just Harry Kim. But I really liked the older Harry Kim. I thought that was really cool. I noticed that there's a lot of shuttle crashes in this episode that, like, Voyager, like, they should really be careful, because a lot of episodes in this season, multiple members of the crew go on an away mission and they have a shuttle crash and it strands the crew, whether it's in Drone where 7 and 9 find a piece of Borg technology and it accidentally becomes a 29th century Borg with the Doctor's holo emitter, or Once Upon a Time where like Paris and Tuvok and Samantha Wildman get stuck, or Gravity where Tuvok and Tom and an alien are stuck in this moon. Like, it was just like there's a lot of shuttle accidents. And then all the stuff with the Delta Flyer, that the more I thought about it, I'd be like, it felt like it was like 5 or 6 episodes in season 5 out of the 26. And so the fact that it's only 3 just should show you that, like, I was just totally burnt out by shuttle accidents. They need to be way more careful, because they're away from Alpha Quadrant and star bases. They don't have the materials to be constantly rebuilding and rebuilding shuttles, that they really need to be more careful, I think. And I really hope that going into season 6, there's not more shuttle crash episodes, because I'm sick of them. The last episode, the season 6 finale, Equinox, Voyager finds that another ship, which we had known the Caretaker was sending multiple ships over a span of time, Equinox, and there it's kind of like the bad twin idea of like, what would this person have turned out if life had gone a different way? And so it's almost like, what would Voyager have been like if it didn't have a captain like Janeway, who stood by her morality and her ethics and adhering to the Prime Directive, even though a lot of people took umbrage with it? And so it was interesting to have another crew led by, you know, Rudy Ransom, and you had someone that knew B'Elanna, and I just found his nickname for her, BLT, Bacon Lettuce Tomatoes, or B'Elanna Taurus, just really funny. And it was an interesting episode. I think it could have been a lot better, but that's for for next episode, where I tackle season 6 of TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. Anyways, this has been a special series of Pop Fishbowl, Nerd Reclamation. I am Ezekiel McAdams. I will be back for hopefully another episode of Pop Fishbowl this month, and it's currently January 2019, as well as another episode of Nerd Reclamation. I'll see you guys later. Have a good rest of your day.